Hello, and welcome to Monumental, where we sit down with entrepreneurs, leaders, visionaries, and big thinkers making monumental change. Here's your host, Evan Holliday.
Welcome to Monumental. I'm your host, Evan Holliday, and today we have on with us the one and only Brandon Turner. Brandon, how you doing, man?
Dude, it is so good to be here right now. I'm pumped to talk about real estate. Anytime I get to talk about real estate, I'm pumped, but especially with you today. This is going to be fun.
Boom. And boom. All the way from Hawaii.
All the way from Hawaii. And I'm even repping my Maui shirt today. Because I was like, I gotta show some Maui pride. So yeah, all the way from the cold South Pacific. I woke up this morning. No, it's freezing here. I mean, most of the world is in a really cold, like really cold right now. But like here, it's like, I woke up, it was like 70. I mean, like 70, wow. like
it's cold. How
are you supposed to survive at 70 degrees? I had to actually wear like a t-shirt this morning. It was rough.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting
poor thing,
it.
Brandon. You poor thing. I know.
I appreciate the prayers and the concerns and the letters and stuff, but I'll make it.
You know, I think I was telling Jeanette, my fiance, I was like, do you think we could move to Hawaii? I literally said that like 2 days ago. So there you is that.
It's funny because like, okay, this is just a business lesson in general. You ever heard that story about like the guy who broke the four, like nobody could beat a 4 minute mile. Oh, yeah. Then that one guy did it. And then everybody did it.
Yeah.
It's because you need that like assurance, right? That if something's possible. So yeah, my buddy moved to Hawaii and I was like, that's a thing. You can just pack up and move to Hawaii. And that's what was like, well, if he could do it, why can't I do it?
Yeah.
And then it's, you start asking that question, how do I move to Hawaii? Not can I move to Hawaii? How do I? And when you ask good questions, like Tim Ferriss says, you get a good answer. So yes. You could move to Hawaii.
I love it. Well, quick little background on Brandon. For those of you who don't know Brandon, he is the founder and managing member of Open Door Capital and is VP of marketing for Bigger Pockets. He's a best-selling real estate author. He's written many, many phenomenal books for Bigger Pockets.
Hundreds.
Okay. and is also the host of the Bigger Pockets podcast, which I'm sure a lot of you have listened to. It's what, the most downloaded real estate podcast in the world?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
I don't actually know if that's a list anywhere, but at least it's the highest ranked in iTunes. I think like 80 million downloads or something like that. It's not bad.
Well, he's competing for number one there too in overall podcast. So
we're working on it. I just got to beat up Joe Rogan and, you know, Dave Ramsey.
Yeah,
Dave,
exactly.
I'm coming for you.
You hear that, Dave? He's listening.
Yeah, he is listening. I'm sure he is. And now he's afraid. He's quaking in his boots.
Well, let's dive in a little bit and just give our listeners a little bit of background. You started really with Bigger Pockets, what, writing the blog posts, right?
Yeah. I was a volunteer writer at Bigger. Well, even before that, I found Bigger Pockets when I was like 21, because I remember typing into Google like what to do when tenants don't pay rent. Because that was the first objection that people had when I said I was going to get into real estate. They're like, well, what are you going to do if tenants don't pay rent? And I'm like, I don't know what to do if tenants don't pay rent. I was like, I guess I'll just go broke. And then I was like, you know, at the time I had read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it was like, don't ask if you can do something, ask how you can do something, right? So I'm like, okay, well, how do tenants, what to do when tenants don't pay rent? And I found this little site. It was tiny at the time, called Bigger Pockets, and it was just a forum. And I found there's a bunch of answers. So that's how, how that started. That was like 12 years ago now. And then 7 years ago, I started volunteer writing and then managing other writers and editing, even though I'm a horrible editor, but Josh didn't know that at the time. I lied my way in, apparently.
Yeah.
No, I'm great at writing, really.
Hey, do whatever it takes. So with Josh, how did you get started doing the podcast together?
Yeah. So I was listening to a podcast back in the day called Smart Passive Income with Pat Flynn. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's another big business podcast. And I had been listening to that because I was kind of like, I had a bunch of rental properties. I think I had like $3,000 a month coming in cash flow. And I was like, well, what do I do now? Do I just keep building my portfolio? Sure. Hate my job though. I wonder how else I can make money besides the job and besides just, you know, cash flow. Cause like cash flow is good, but like there's months where like all of a sudden it just goes to nothing because you have a massive expense or you're going to go buy a property. Right. So I was like, okay, I got to find a way to make more money. And that's when I started an online business, started listening to Pat Flynn. And I really liked, like, I felt like I knew the guy, right? Like, I was like, me and Pat are best friends, even though we had never met. And so I was when I came and started working on Bigger Pockets more like heavily from a volunteer to like a 1099, like contractor started getting paid, and then it became a W-2. I actually like got, he's like, well, why don't we make it the official, make it a job? Great. So when that happened, I was like, well, I mean, it worked so good for Pat Flynn. Why don't we just copy what Pat did? Just do the same thing and just make a podcast that interviews people. And that's how it happened.
And then boom, how many episodes? Like what? 300, 400 something?
Episodes? Yeah. I think we're at like 370-ish, something like that. I don't know. 380. I don't know. It's a lot. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I know a lot of our listeners have gotten a lot of value out of that.
Yeah. Thanks.
And so now today you're mobile home park investing, you're open door capital, you've built this massive brand for yourself and for bigger pockets, and you live in Hawaii. Walk us through how that all happened.
Yeah. I call it luck. So I think, okay, there's this analogy of like, and I've heard multiple people say it, so I'm not sure who coined it first, but you know, when you're surfing, have you ever surfed before?
Yeah.
In Tennessee, I'm sure there's lots of surfing there.
Yeah, but right.
Yeah, you know the idea when you're surfing and like there's waves that come at you, and some are really good waves and some are really crappy waves. But either way, you see a wave coming at you, you get ready and you start paddling. And sometimes the wave ends up not being very good and just kind of passes you by. But every once in a while, a really good wave comes and you're in the right spot at the right time and you just hit that wave at the peak and it's just like the best ride ever. I like to think Bigger Pockets, myself, where Josh was at, where the community was at with the podcast launch and where real estate was in the cycle, hit this spot in the market where it was just like rocket fuel because we hit that wave just right. And so whatever that was that took it up, again, I didn't know it. Like, people tend to think like I had some kind of like skill going into that. Like literally I had zero, I didn't even own a computer like a year before, six months before working in Bigger Pockets. I mean, I had never taken a business class, never read a business book, didn't know marketing, nothing. Wow. I just listened to some Pat Flynn stuff and did some internet marketing research and got really lucky because the surge, as Mike Michalowicz would call it, we timed the market right. So that's how it happened. So anyway, that just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew to the point where now there's 30 or 40 or 50 people working at Bigger Pockets. I don't even know because I live in Maui and I was like, I lived in Washington. Everyone else is in Denver. And I was like, why am I in Washington where it rains all the time? I could work in Hawaii. So that's when I moved to Maui.
I love it. And you brought up a good point. I've heard you talk about this and I'm a firm believer of, if somebody has something good going, like Bigger Pockets, like Josh already started some momentum behind that.
Yeah.
And you were able to add value to him. And then in the process, be a part of that quickly growing team that had that traction, that had that like massive growth, that rocket fuel, like you said.
Yeah, that is so under talked about and under, I mean, every entrepreneur in the world wants to go start their own thing and they want to be their own person. Right. And I get that. Cause I'm doing like, I've always felt that as well. I'm always starting random businesses or as I did for years. We all want to be independent, but at the same time, like if you can jump on a surfboard of somebody who's already got momentum going.
Yeah.
And I mean that for real estate, for business, for whatever. So like I jumped on Josh's surfboard. I mean, a good example, like, I mean, out here now, where Open Door Capital is the investment company that I founded and I'm building. But like, I'm not the only owner of it. Like the general partnership is like five or six people because like, I'm like, come on in, jump on the surfboard with me. Let's do this, right? Because I had some momentum and I got the ability to raise money and I got this big audience to hunt for deals for me. So I'm like, jump on the surfboard, everybody. And let's do this together. And so a lot of people are able to, where maybe they were buying like one property a year, all of a sudden now are part of a general partnership where we're buying 1,000 units in a year. And so that's our goal this year is to buy 1,000 pads. And so, jumping on somebody else's surfboard is a powerful tool that not talked about enough.
Physically and metaphorically.
Yeah. All the bradas up here and the Maui surf spots, they love when I just jump on their board while they're surfing. It's really good for the pale, awkward white guy to just jump on everyone's board.
Really builds that rapport quickly.
It builds that rapport. Yeah. Get ready to build relationships there.
I love it. I love it. Honestly, that's how I got my start in real estate was I found out I love real estate and then I just jumped on the surfboard of the company that I ended up working with for 6 years and built thousands of units with them and learned how to make it happen. And now we're doing it on our own. And it's that very same thing as, learning from other people ahead of you and not being afraid to be like, hey, I'll join their ship for a while and see where this takes me.
Yeah. So true. So true.
So Open Door Capital, you raised Fund One. How many units did you get with Fund One?
Good question. Fund One, it's around 400. It was a little bit complicated, and we bought a park, and we bought two parks with Fund One, and that was like 160 total units. And then we bought another park, but that park was going to be more expensive than what Fund One could afford to buy it for. So we're like, all right, we're opening up Fund Two. So then we opened up Fund Two, which is open right now, and we raised for that one, but we still had enough from Fund One to buy something else. So then we bought a third park to put into the first fund. So we just kind of jumped the line on that just to make them fit. Yeah, because otherwise we would have had to go and because we had like a $5 million fund, we would have had to go get every single investor's signature to bump it to like $6 million in order to buy that other park. And we're like, trying to track down 50 or 60 signatures was going to be a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So, and then raising another million. So we just opened up a second fund. So it was around, I'm going to say 300 actually in Fund One. And we're probably going to put 500 units in Fund Two, maybe 600 because it's twice as big. It's a $10 million. Well, our goal is $10 million. We have the ability to go higher, but that's our goal is stick with 10.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, it's been crazy.
Let's back up. Why mobile home parks and how'd you get started in that?
Yeah. Have you seen Trailer Park Boys, the show?
I love it.
It's exactly like, no, so I had interviewed a few people on the Bigger Pockets podcast. Jefferson Lilly was one of them early on, Kevin Bupp later on, about mobile home parks. And whenever I talked to mobile home park guys, every time I walked away from that going, that just sounds so cool. And I really just liked it. And I'm not one to say that mobile home parks are better than apartments. In fact, there's a lot of challenges that we have to deal with because it's mobile home parks, and we can talk about that. But the more important thing is that I decided. Like, the number one best investment for you is the one you decide. It's kind of like a photographer. If there's a famous photographer line of like, what's the best camera? The one you have.
Yeah.
And so it's more important that you decide than what you decide. So like, I could have chosen self-storage. I could have chosen apartment complexes, repositioning, BRRRR, whatever. So instead, I chose mobile home parks because I just thought, that sounds cool. But now I backed into this. Some reasons that the more I looked into it, the more I really liked it. I think they're the primary reason. I think they're the most recession resistant investment class out there. Like, when the recession does come, if it comes, a lot of investments are going to be hurt, especially the high end apartment complexes and the big syndications. Like, a lot of them that are projecting, you know, cap rates to continue to stay where they are forever and rents to only go up over the next 10 years. I think that they're going to be, a lot of them are going to be in trouble. And so I thought, well, how do I prevent? Because I mean, I have a good amount of money. I mean, I sell a stupid number of books. And so it's a good problem. So I'm like, what do I do with that? I don't want to just go keep buying single family houses and duplexes because it takes a lot of time. And I'm nervous about just giving it to a bunch of syndicators, even though there are some great ones. And I did do that for a while, give it to syndicators. But then I was like, well, how can I prevent against the recession? And so I looked in the mobile home parks. And here's why they're recession resistant is the way I think it is, because rents tend to compress from the top down. So when the economy goes to crap, the people that are living in $3,000 a month rentals, they're going to be like, oh, we got to tighten our budget. And they're going to go to $2,500. And $2,500 go to $2,000. $2,000 go to $1,600. $1,600 go to $1,300. And it tends to compress because when you're at lot rent of $225, lot rent doesn't really change much when the economy, because they can pay that on their Social Security or whatever. So rent is affected much less. So if rents do decline, I'm going to be okay. Plus, we're not basing our value off of natural appreciation, which means the economy continuing to get better and better and rents go up. We're basing it upon infill. So we buy a park that's 70% occupied. We make it 95% occupied. And we've suddenly added, 20% value, 25% like value of the park just by doing that without even touching rents. We've just increased the value dramatically, which then increases cash and cash return and everything else. So we've decided that our focus is going to be mobile home parks, and our emphasis within that focus is going to be infill. So we want to be the best infill specialist in America by mobile home parks. So if there's a mobile home park that needs infill, we do that. That's the
boom.
Plan.
Mic drop. Boom.
That's it.
I love it. I love
it. Focus is so important. And I wish more investors did this, right? Like, they're like, I want to get into real estate and I want to do BRRRR and house hacking and flipping and this, and I'm going to do this. And like, because they never become experts. Like, I encourage people today. It's like, what can you be the number one best person in your market by far than anybody else? Like, what's that thing that you get to be the best? Do that. And if you're doing two or three things at once, you're never going to be the best. Yeah. Unless you become the best first and then you can branch out. But you got to become the best by focusing.
Yeah. I love that you hit on that, because that's my word for 2020. My theme is relentlessly focused.
Nice. Yeah.
Because it's so true. It's like, you know, for me, I want to be the best affordable workforce housing developer in the country, in the world.
Yeah.
You know, that's
workforce housing is a great niche for recession resistance as well. Yeah. Like that was another top choice of mine, that one. And a few things like that. I'm like, I think this will do okay. Yeah. I think you're 100% right there.
Yeah. And honestly, that too, recession resistant. That's why I love what I do, because I'm like, you know, people are like, well, are you scared about developing in 2020? We're on the back end of the cycle. I'm like, no, I'm not, because we're serving families that are making 30 to 70,000 a year.
Yes.
Those are families, and we're building brand new Class A, and we're using partly public financing to make it happen.
So that's cool.
We're doing something very unique. It takes a lot of headache and brain damage to do it, but it's a lot more recession resistant, and we can be more bullish on development than other people are.
That's cool. Yeah, that's smart. I love that.
So I love what you're saying about recession resistant. I think it's, you can be very risky in real estate, and then you can be very smart in real estate, but you can make money both ways. It's just how much risk do you want to play with?
Yeah. And you know, people oftentimes, I think that I'm like saying there's a recession coming. I have no idea, right? Like I'm convinced that predicting a recession is simply a matter of, what's that phrase where it's like it's like history is told by the victors of war, you know, like it's like everybody that predicted it, quote unquote, last time, they're like, see, I knew it was coming because of this. Like, yeah, but there's 100 other people that suggested something else. So like all we're seeing is, there's a word for that's bias, like victor's bias or something like that. I'm sure people are laughing. Yeah, whatever that word is. It's like, whatever, like the winner is, like they think that they caused it or they predicted or whatever. Really, there's, it's a crapshoot in a way. I'm fairly convinced of that. Not, of course, you can tell, like there's signs, but I mean, for like 5 years now, I've been hearing every single year that a recession's coming again. So I have no idea. Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is make sure I profit. And you're doing the same thing. Profit no matter the recession. Exactly. If it comes, fine. If it doesn't come, great. Either way, we win. Yeah. But I'm not going to bet everything upon it not going or upon it going. I want to win no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. And I think that's what our monumental listeners, that's the attitude you all should be taking as well, is thinking about, okay, if it goes up 3%, if the economy goes up 3% next year, if it goes down 10%, I'm still going to be in a position where I have enough cash flow, enough liquidity where I can keep moving forward.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking at.
So first mobile home park, what was that like? Walk us through it.
Yeah. So the first one was actually prior to even the fund. So me and Ryan Murdoch, let me give you a tip here. So I started telling everybody I knew that I was looking for a deal on mobile home park, and I had very clear criteria. It was 50 units. Today I've doubled that. Now it's 100, but it was 50 units, city sewer and water, in an economy that, like, you know, had some kind of population, not in the middle of nowhere completely. And so I just kept telling people that, like, 50 units, public city and sewer and water, mobile home park. That's what I'm looking for. And one of those people heard me say it was Ryan Murdoch. So Ryan called me up. He'd been on the podcast a couple of years ago. We didn't really know each other other than that. And he emailed me and said, hey, I know this is probably a long shot, but there's a deal in my market. I'm just passing on good information. You know, whatever. It's probably not good. And I looked at the numbers and I was like, no, actually, that actually looks pretty good. But I didn't know anything about Bangor, Maine. It's like the middle of nowhere up in Maine, right? Yeah. But it's a big enough city that it was fine. And so I said, Ryan, I'm interested, but I'm not doing this alone. Do you want to partner on it? And so we ended up partnering with him plus a couple, Mindy and Carl Jensen, who Mindy works at Bigger Pockets. And we bought this mobile home park, this 40. It was, at the time, it was 42 units. Today, we've added a few, so now it's like 50. But it was only 30 occupied. So we've gone from 30 to 50 now. So you can imagine what that's done to our cash flow by having 30 units. Now, we haven't made a lot of cash flow in 2 years simply because every bit, we just keep buying more units to bring in. And what we do is we buy homes, bring them in, and then we sell them on contract to a tenant. And so we don't want to own the home. We just want to own the land is the ideal. And so, yeah, that first park, I mean, we learned a lot. We learned that every unit needs a lot of rehab every time you take one over. And so you got to plan for that. We learned that you get some interesting characters. Like we had one woman who was running a prostitution. I don't even have a prostitution because the phone call we got was from a guy saying, yeah, it was a phone call in the voicemail. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to call the cops or anything for obvious reasons, but you know, I went and paid number 55, a visit the other day and, paid my money, took off my clothes And then some guy walks in and robs me. And so, so she was robbing, she was running a robbery prostitution, like a fake prostitution robbery outfit out of that unit. So, we get fun story. Yeah. See, yeah, exactly. It's normal. A few months later, we had a guy, who lived in our place, stop paying rent because he was on the run from the cops because he robbed a bank. So the FBI was after him. So we had a bank robber living in there. We inherited him. We would not have put a bank robber in. And I don't even know how standards. That one turned out. Yeah, exactly. We have higher standards than that. So I don't know how that even turned out because we have a property manager who takes care of most everything. And then Ryan kind of runs asset management on that project and knows what's going on the rest of the way. And that's kind of a nice position to be in, is you get a team around you that knows what they're doing and it just runs and it runs every month. So
I love that. Well, let's get into that. But first, let's talk about like the deal funnel. What does that look like for you? And you guys are now looking at deals all over the country, right?
Yeah, we'll look pretty much anywhere. I mean, in fact, Ryan right now, like he was at a San Francisco Bay Summit or whatever that real estate conference is called in San Francisco with Jay Martin. He was at that thing, gets a lead on a mobile home park in Illinois, jumps on a plane from San Francisco. Instead of coming back to Maui, jumps to Illinois, checks that park out. At the same time, there's another one in Indiana that's coming up from like auction. And so he jumps over to that one. So yeah, we're just kind of all over the place. We're big believers on setting foot in the parks before we even bid on them, because it gives us that competitive advantage. I mean, yeah, we're going to go see a lot of parks, waste a lot of time and waste a lot of money, but that has actually already netted us deals because they knew that we were more serious than everyone else. Cause we were before we, like when there's multiple offers on a property, the fact that we've stepped foot in there and you know, shown that we are willing to do that has gone a long way on getting our offers accepted. So yeah, we'll buy anywhere right now, but mainly deal funnel just comes right now from brokers. So we just build relationships with some of the top mobile home park brokers in the country, though we are expanding to try to do a whole lot more off market stuff. That's kind of the focus of the next couple of months.
I like it. So mainly brokers, looking at next step off market. And then also, we talked about right before we got started, you're working on a website.
Yeah. Yeah. So, bringbrandonadeal.com. This actually started kind of a joke. We were sitting around talking. We had a big team meeting out here in Maui a couple of weeks ago. I had my whole Open Door Capital team here. And we're sitting at this coffee shop just talking about how to get deals. And I was like, you know, we've got like, you know, 250,000 people that listen to every episode of the podcast. And I, you know, do a webinar every week to 10,000 people live. And I got 100,000 people on my Instagram, and I was like, maybe we should just like find a way that other people can bring us deals and, you know, get a big chunk of money for it. And then we all kind of talked about it. And I was like, yeah, let's just make it like bringbrandonadeal.com. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, that's actually catchy enough to work. So of course the domain name is available. So we bought it and we're going to launch that here. It should be launched by the time the show's out. And we're just basically saying, hey, bring us a mobile home park. We'll give you 50 grand. Like this is like $50,000 finder's fee on a mobile home park. And, you know, you could use that to dump back into the fund and be part of it, or you can just take that cash and go and buy a yacht. I don't care. But, yeah, 50 grand, bring us a deal, because we know that if we can make the numbers work, 50 grand is a small price to pay. We pay more than that to real estate agents. I mean, like,
yeah, so,
but it's gotta be off market. That's kind of our specialty. It's 100 units, city, sewer and water, has to be off market. So no broker involved, and, 50K. That's
guys. Take Brandon up on it. He's offering up 50K.
50K to bring a mobile home park. Yeah. So we're going to be that. Yeah. The website will have more details on what exactly, like, it's not, what I like to say is a lead is not an address.
Yeah.
Like you can't just be like, hey, there's a mobile home park over there. You know, throw in like, cause somebody, you know, will go and give me a spreadsheet of all 50,000 mobile home parks in the country and say, there's some leads for you. Now, if any of them pan out, I want 50 grand.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be some involvement. We have some specifics on what that looks like, but it's pretty simple. It's like build a relationship with a seller, connect us, and go from there. So, yeah.
Isn't that amazing, just the power of a brand and the power of your audience and your community? I mean, it's the same thing with what you're doing on the capital side too. I mean, raising that capital, you said Fund 2 is out of 10 million, you're 75% there already?
And I think we had 6 million committed in the first 24 hours, and now we're up at like almost 8.
Wow.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
yeah.
I think people don't understand the power of social media. And where the power is not like, hey, I posted an ad on Facebook for raising money, which by the way is generally you can't do anyway, but the way my fund's set up, I can. We can talk about specifics if we want to, but it's about people give money to people they like and trust. Like at the end of the day, like I've given money to syndicators, and like, yeah. Sound stupid here, but I'm gonna say it anyway. The last time I did that, I did not even open up the executive summary and the PPM they sent. I didn't even look at it. It didn't matter to me because all I knew was they were projecting a 15% return, and I like and trust the person. And I was like, all right. So because here's what it comes down to. I know people who will spend hours poring over an executive summary and PPM, like really going through the numbers and trying to figure that out. And I'm like, at the end of the day, do you trust the person that they know what they're doing or not? Because like, they've had attorneys go over that stuff. They've had their team go over that stuff. I'm sure it's fine. If they're trying to rob me, I'm not going to catch it anyway, because I'm not knocking on Dorothy's Johnson's door at 507A and saying, hey, it says here in this rent roll that you're paying $875. Is that true? Like, if we trust that, which we all do, we just trust rent rolls. Why would we not trust the rest of their numbers? I guess. So again, I'm not saying you shouldn't do your due diligence. People should. But people lend money to people they like and trust. And what better way to like and trust at scale than social media? Like that and podcasting. Like people like and trust you because they hear you or they see you and your family and what you do and your ethic and your work. And like they know I have 100,000 followers on Instagram. I'm not going to suddenly just screw people over for the fun of it because I would lose my entire brand and reputation. So yeah, start building your reputation right now. And even if you have 2,000 followers on Instagram or on Facebook, that's great. Like that's a 2,000 people that might end up lending you money someday. So start building it.
Yeah. No, I tell everybody, and every Monumental listener's heard me say this many times over, of like, if you don't have it already, start building a brand either through social media or podcast or both or YouTube channel, whatever it is. Like put some time into creating valuable free content that adds value to others. And then you build this community. And same happened to me. I mean, I've only been at it probably 2 years of investing into content creation and podcasting, and same thing. It leads to fundraising. It leads to deals. I've had partners come out of it. They literally bring me deals. They're like, hey, we want you on it because we heard this podcast episode, yada, yada. And next thing you know, I'm involved in a deal that I didn't even have to source.
Yep. That's it. It's smart.
So now you're getting the capital side of it from your brand funnel, more or less. Yep. And then also getting turning the deal side on and saying, how can we source deals off market potentially from your brand and your community?
Yep. That's the more of the power of the brand. It definitely powerful stuff.
So how much time do you invest into content creation?
Good question. I mean, because I do a lot of it for Bigger Pockets. I'm probably like, if I had to guess, I probably spend 10 hours a week, maybe 15 hours a week on like some kind of between Instagram, my Beardy Brandon posts, and like YouTube videos for Bigger Pockets and the podcast, probably 15, 20 hours a week of actual content creation. Though that can go up and down. Because the nice thing is like the more I do them, the more they become systematized. So for example, on Instagram, every other post, I've been doing this thing now, every other post is a black page with my little logo on it and a list or directions or a quote. And it just makes it look kind of cool on Instagram when you're looking at my page. But it also keeps me like making sure when people see, like my thought was this, if somebody goes to your Instagram and they have 3 seconds to decide whether to follow you or not, do they say yes or do they say no? And I would encourage everyone, go to your Instagram and say, if somebody landed here in 3 seconds, are they going to say, yeah, I'll follow that person because it benefits my life or not? And if the answer is no, before mine was like, I mean, yeah, I was growing and stuff, mostly because of the podcast, but like strangers who didn't listen to the Bigger Pockets podcast would land on my page and see a bunch of pictures of me and my kids and my family. And that's fine for a personal Instagram page, but was that going to benefit them in any way? Not at all. But now when they go there and like the first one is like how to flip houses and make 50 grand a year. Oh, it's like step one, do this. Step two, step three. Well, now all of a sudden it's like, I want to follow this because they got good advice here. And then every other one keeps me in that kind of rhythm. I'm not sure what your question was, but that's where I went.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. And you're exactly right. That honestly is something that I'm pushing to be more active on, is like, how can you more quickly add value to people? Because you're right. I mean, people look and they're like, oh, 3 seconds. Yes. No. Okay. Next.
Yep.
And I mean, people have limited attention span when it comes to that, and they want some quick result, and you can give them that with a post. Yeah.
You know, I'll even throw out, like, being clever or creative, like, you know, because you got to stand out from everybody else too. Like, people don't want to follow everybody in the world, right? So, like, there's things like the fact that, like, I have that little, like, beardy logo makes it look a little bit more professional. So it's like, oh, maybe this is, like, a legit thing. I should follow them. Things like, again, like, the fact that, like, I keep that rhythm of they know what to expect continually. But, like, some things that I don't do that maybe if I was starting out I would look into doing would be, like, you know how iPhones, you have an iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
So iPhone, like, has that ability where you can, like, chat with somebody and you can turn your face into, like, a dog or a cat or a moose or whatever. I don't know, a bunch of different animals. Yeah. And you can, like, I was like, what if somebody just had an Instagram account where they just, like, gave really good advice about real estate or wealth or finance or whatever, and every time it was with a face of, like, a dog. And, like, it was just, like dog advice. Like, that's a funny, clever thing. I'd follow that site if it was good content.
Yeah.
But it's like, nobody's doing that, but you would stand out. Like, it's like, how can you stand out? How can you be that, as Seth Godin calls it, a purple cow, right? Yeah. He's like, you look into a field, there's 100 cows. You see a purple one, it stands out. You're like, oh, what's going on with that cow? I'm going to go talk to that cow. I'm going to figure out why he's purple. And so, like, how can you do that? Again, there's 100 ways, but that's kind of the way I think about social media. It's how can you just stand out a little bit more?
Yeah, I love that. You're exactly right. I love your beardy logo.
I need to extend the beard though. I've surpassed the beard and the logo. I got to get a new logo because it's
that'll be your next purple cow post.
Exactly. Yes.
I love it. Well, diving back into Open Door Capital, how did you put together your team and how did you decide how to structure that and get everybody on the surfboard?
Yes. How did I get them all on the surfboard? The biggest lesson, I like to think of less, like, I learn a big lesson, I feel like, every year. And I have, like, kind of themes. How you said, like, your theme was, what was it?
Relentlessly
focused. Yeah, I kind of do that as well. And I kind of look back and say, last year was the year of this. So, like, last year, like, not 2019, but 2018, I was like, that was the year where I was like, where what I really learned was that I can work with people who are both competent and likable, or both rock stars in terms of their personality and rock stars in terms of their ability. And for years, I mean, for 20 years, I've kind of thought I had to choose between them. So that was the year where I learned, that was the lesson I learned. And a lot of that came from working with, like, Ryan Murdoch. Cause, like, I realized I really like him a lot, but he's also a rock star in terms of talent.
Yeah.
But this year, like 2019, when I put my team together, was kind of like the biggest lesson. I don't have a short way of saying this, but it was basically, you never know how someone's going to be, if they're going to be a rock star in either way, until you've worked with them. Like, I'm convinced that, like, generally, like, resumes are pointless and like, all the interviews are mostly pointless. I mean, I do them, but they don't tell you if somebody's good. All they do is tell you how well somebody lies. And so, and even if people talk a big game of, like, man, like, they can do this or that, or they get really good at this, like, you never know until you work with them. So every single person on my team was somebody that I built a relationship prior. They worked for free for me for a while, or somehow was involved for free, and later on brought them on once I could see what they could do. Example of that. So Mike Williams, so we launched kind of like a analysis team and kind of a sales team back like a year ago to find mobile home parks. That was my first attempt and it was okay. It ended up being more work than it was worth, I think, at the time. But my idea was, let's just get five people out there looking for deals and train them how to do it, and five people just to analyze deals, and the salespeople will bring in leads, analyze people, analyze them, and whoever finds the deals get part of the GP. That was the original idea. So the one guy ended up leading the sales team. His name was Mike Williams. People would, like, reach out to him, and he just emerged as, like, the leader of one of these groups. And I'd also seen him work. He actually interviewed for a Bigger Pockets role, and I'd seen him around a little bit more. We had talked a few times, but that, like, seeing him for, like, 3 or 4 or 5 months working through there is actually what, like, made me say, okay, yeah, that guy, I'm bringing him on. And we ended up hiring him. The exact same on the analysis team, the guy who ended up actually building our entire spreadsheet, like, our entire underwriting model, and, like, worked, I don't know, he probably worked 20 hours a week for, like, 6 months for us. Wow. For nothing. Just, and so, like, I was like, dude, like, I gotta have you. So we had him quit his job, and I paid him, like, a good salary now, and he's our full-time underwriter. And, but he had to prove himself first, and he did. So anyway, long story short, every single person had to prove themselves first as a doer and as somebody that it has to be both rock star personality, rock star and ability, and prove it before we'll end up hiring. So now we're at 6 or 7 people, and every single person, like, we just get along amazing, and, like, it just runs like a well-oiled machine.
And I love that. I honestly haven't heard it put that way before. So I appreciate you for that, because you're right. I mean, you really don't truly understand somebody's model of the world or like how they see things, how they operate until you work with them.
Yeah.
So how did you get people to sign on board with that? Of like, sounds like they were more like working on the come or working, you know, for deals. How did you get
that? I mean, one thing, I mean, I'll fully admit it. I have an easier time getting people because I have a big Instagram following, right? So I just posted on Instagram, had 700 people apply. So like but even if you have like a hundredth of my size Instagram following or Facebook, or you have friends in the area. So the idea is you just want they were basically working for part of the GP. I think I offered them a small piece of the GP if they end up helping us find the deal. And so all these people were like, generally people who had done a couple deals on their own. I think Mike had like four or five properties of his own, but he wanted to get into the bigger deals and he wanted to be part of a movement. And this actually is just a super important thing for everybody to understand, is like people want to be part of something. I mean, I want to be part of something. I want like, that's what Bigger Pockets like is something. And I was like happy to be a part of it. And people who are just members of BP or pro members of BP, like they're part of something that we're changing the world. Right. So as a business owner, like if you want to attract people to you, you have to be going somewhere. You have to be like attractable. And so the way that I attract people in a large way is like, I have a very clear vision on where I'm headed. And I talk about this a lot, but I read this book called The Vivid Vision. This is where it all kind of started, by a guy named Cameron Harold. And that book was all about just like, don't have a mission statement for your company that says, you know, we are going to be the top producing company in the world. Like instead say like this is, it's like, this is where our company is in 3 years. It's like even like written in the future. So I actually made mine like a newspaper article. It's on my wall. I actually blew it up 4 feet high. It's on my wall. It's a newspaper article. It's called The $50 Million Surfers, How a Small Team of Adventure Seekers Built a Real Estate Empire, Helped Millions Achieve Financial Independence, and Kept Their Humanity Intact. And it starts just, I mean, it looks like a newspaper article. It reads like a newspaper article.
That's awesome.
It's like, here's what Open Door Capital is. Here's what we buy. Here's why we do it. Here's what the team looks like. Here's what the different roles are. Here's what we do for benefits. Here's how, like, every year we do an amazing company retreat where we just go into adventure stuff. That's what we did last week, living the vision. We also do a one humanitarian week somewhere and go help, like, you know, starving kids somewhere or whatever. We'll build a house. We'll do something like that every year. Anyway, all this stuff. I even wrote on there, I have a New York Times bestselling book. Like, I don't have that yet, but I'm going to, right? It's all in the vision on where we're headed. And when people read that, so I wrote it on an airplane ride from Salt Lake City. I had a layover in Salt Lake. So I read it, okay, Denver to Salt Lake. I read the book. It's an hour long.
Was that after Best Ever?
This was right after Best Ever, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep, so I went to the Best Ever conference where I was surrounded with people who were doing way more than me, and I just felt like I was a loser there. Even though I was, like, speaking there. Like, I'm like, man, these people are,
keynoting the whole thing.
Yeah, I was keynoting the thing, but I'm like, man, Joe Fairless has, like, $1 billion in real estate, and those guys got $100 million. And I'm, like, here over with my, like, I had, like, 800 units at the time that were all, like, my own. And I was like, man, I want to build something cool and big. Not just because I need it, like I already have, you know, financial freedom or whatever, but because I want to be part of something. It's the same thing. We're all drawn to be part of something. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do it. So I read that book, Vivid Vision, hit me at the right point. That 7-hour flight then from Salt Lake to Maui, I wrote the vision, the entire thing. I landed, I showed Ryan, and the first thing he said was, dude, I want to be part of this. And I was like, I know, I want to be part of this. Like, this is cool. And everybody I showed it to was like, I want to be part of this. Like, I mean, like 30-hour work weeks. I said 30-ish hour work weeks, where it's like we're not tracking time. Like you're like, I put in probably around 30 hours. That's kind of the goal. And right now, I think everyone puts in way more than that. But like that's the vision we want to get to, is where it's so streamlined, and people know what they're doing, and we all like working together. So anyway, that's how you attract a team, is by being attractable, and you do that through having a powerful vision, and that's just a leadership skill that doesn't come naturally. But the more you can build a vision and get people united beyond it, behind it, then you can set benchmarks and KPIs that like level up to the vision. So like our goal was $50 million and 1,000 units within 3 years. We're going to hit it in a year and a half. Like we're going to hit it twice as fast because we have that strong vision and the right team. Yeah. So like, yeah, get a vision and people will follow you, or find somebody else who has a vision and go work with them and get on their surfboard.
Yeah. Jump on all the surfboards.
There you go.
So I love that. I love the vivid vision. I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to dive into that because that you're exactly right. I think if leaders can get crystal clear on where they're going, then they can more clearly demonstrate that and get people excited and on board and on the surfboard and all going in the same direction, including themselves too. Cause I think entrepreneurs have that of like, sometimes they don't feel clear and they don't know exactly what direction to go in. And like you said earlier, like you got to figure out, what do you want to be the best at? What do you want to be known for? What do you want to be the one thing that you focus on? And getting crystal clear on that. And I love the vision too, like vividly, like,
yeah,
this is what it's going to look like. And these are the outings we're going to have. And, you know, bunch of surfboarders making all this impact and money. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Cause it's not about just money either. It's like, the question I kept asking myself was not like, what's right, or what should I do? What's my destiny, or what would be make me the most money? It was like simply the question I just kept asking over and over. What would be awesome? Like, what would be an awesome company to work for? Like, what would I want to work in every single day? What would be awesome? I like to use the analogy of we're not on a beach with a metal detector trying to find some hidden destiny in there. We are a painter at a blank canvas, and you can do whatever you want to do. So like, paint something awesome. Like, have a vision for your life. And this is not just real estate. This is everything. It's like, have a vision for your life and go for it. Cause it's just a blank canvas in front of all of us. So yeah. Paint.
And I love that you said, what would be awesome? Like, that's a great prompt for people to just take away from this episode. Be like, just take some time to yourself, no distractions, and just think about it and journal on that. Cause that's a great prompt. So that makes me wonder, how often do you journal, or do you like set aside distractions and say, hey, I want to get, you know, even more clear on certain next steps or vision, or what, how do you do that?
Sure. Yeah. So currently what I do, so I use Bigger Pockets, this will be a shameless plug, but we use a journal called the Intention Journal. I developed it over the course of a couple of years, but we launched it last year. First version was called the 90 Days of Intention Journal. Second edition was called just the Intention Journal. We just took out 90 days. So it's called the Intention Journal. But I do it every single morning, and I actually chronicle it on my Instagram stories every morning to keep me accountable. Like, I'm such a huge believer in accountability. And like, both other people seeing what you're doing, getting a rhythm, keeping habits going. So like, I post it publicly now what I'm working on. I've got three goals that I'm working on every morning. I write down what the goal is: raising $10 million for the fund and deploying it, or having properties to deploy. Working out 75 days in quarter one, because I wanted to work out 300 times this year. And that came, actually both these goals really came from my January 1st planning. So the way I structure my life is essentially vision, 1 year goals, quarterly goals, weekly battle plans, daily action plans, and then most important, next steps. So I take it from vision of where I'm headed long term. What do I have to do this year to accomplish that? What do I got to do this quarter to accomplish the year goal? And this came from the one thing from Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. What do I got to do this quarter? So the goal for the vision is to be super in shape. The goal for the year is to work out 300 times. It's a process goal rather than like a weight goal. So I want to work out 300 times. Quarterly, okay, that means 75 times. Great. That means weekly, I got to work out 6 times every week. Okay. So then what am I going to do today? I got to work out today. So then I take my journal, and then every morning I'm like, all right, where am I going to fit it on my calendar today? And there's a spot that actually breaks through a calendar, gives you spots from 5 a.m. to 10:30. It's like, here's what I'm going to do right now. Every half hour. So if I don't put my workout in there, I won't work out. Like, it just won't happen, because if I don't schedule it, it doesn't get done. In fact, they did this study a while back, which took three groups of people, the scientific study or psychology study, three groups of people, and asked them to go work out. They all wanted to work out more, these people. So they said, okay, go work out more. The first group, they didn't do anything. They just said, okay, go work out more. Second group, they said, we want you to watch this informational video or read this pamphlet about working out and the benefits of exercise. So the funny thing is, the first group, it was like 30-some percent, like 32%, ended up working out that said they were going to. The second group, who watched the motivation, it declined to like 29%. Crazy. So like, of all the people who wanted to work out, only a third of them actually did, like out of those two groups. The third group, though, 92% of them actually worked out. What was the difference? Why did 92% work out? It took 5 seconds. They had to simply say when and where they're going to work out. The simple act of saying when and where tripled their chance of finishing their workout that week. And so people wonder all the time why they're not accomplishing things. Like, oh, I was going to analyze some deals this week, I didn't get it done. I was going to go on a date with my wife this week, I didn't get it done. It's like, well, did you schedule it? Because if not, you're just fighting against the current. Like, you're fighting against the whirlwind of life. Rant over. Set goal. Do it every day.
Done it. So how did you get to that point though of creating the intention journal and being that accountable person that you are today and using that every day? How did you get to that point?
Yeah, good question. I started using other journals over the years. I'm one thing, because they always appealed to me, and I never really stuck with any of them for very long. I think Grant Cardone had one. Darren Hardy had one that I really liked a lot. And so I probably went through 5 or 6 different journals over the year, but none of them were designed for real estate investors. And some of them were a little bit, I don't know, they all had good things, but none of them had exactly what I wanted. So then a buddy of mine, Anson Young, who lives in Denver, he's a flipper in Denver. Anson's a super cool guy. I was out to eat with him one day in Denver, and he showed me his journal, and he's like, oh yeah, I just made it myself. I was like, you made a journal? He's like, yeah, I couldn't find what I liked. So I went to Blurb. It's called like blurb.com, blurb.com. And I was like, I just made my own. And I was like, you can do that? Like, that's a thing. So like, I went home that week and I made my own. And like, it was a very, very early version. And I used it for a long time. And I just kept making little notes on what I liked, what I didn't like. And then made another one. And then made another one. By like the third one, I sent it to Katie at publishing, at Bigger Pockets Publishing. I was like, we should really like release this, because this is really good now. And, but for the deeper question of how I became that kind of person that does that kind of stuff, I don't know. I mean, I just am such a believer in accountability, and like, because I know that my nature is to not get stuff done. I think people look at me and think that I get a lot of stuff done and that I accomplish a lot, but like, my nature is to not. It's to scroll on Instagram all day or Facebook. So I have to find ways to fight against that ogre in my head that says, just go lay down and sleep, because that's more fun.
Yeah. I think we all have that ogre in us.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And most, like, you have to learn how to fight it. And I use a combination of like accountability. I actually have a video at Bigger Pockets that's probably out right about now that this episode comes out, but it's kind of on this. It's like I use accountability. I use habit building and habit tracking. I use like just like getting the most important thing every day done, like right away. That way, at least if I did nothing else, at least in the first hour, I accomplished that one thing. I analyzed that deal. I had the interview with that person, whatever. So those are some stuff I do.
I love it. So what, as far as the vivid vision, do you have a vivid vision or an idea in mind of you and your family and your life, you know, 5-10 years from now?
Yeah. I mean, family wise, I want more kids. I think that'd be fun. we're in tough baby time right now. We have a baby 12 weeks old, and it's, do you have kids?
No, not yet.
Okay. When you get kids someday, like first 6 months are rough. And so like, if you ask me normal, like right now, I'm like, I don't ever want another kid again, but I know like I'll get through this and be like, man, having kids is the best thing ever. And so I like more kids. I want to travel a whole lot more. I just got a book. So I did like the rude thing of like, I was at this furniture store, and they have a lot of books lying around at a furniture store, weirdly enough. And the books are all for sale, but it was like $60 for a book, because it's a furniture store in Wailea, which is like the most rich town of Maui. And I looked at this book, and it was called The Bucket List. And it was 1,000 adventures, big and small, to go on in your life.
Cool.
And I was like, it was like $60 at the store. So I went on Amazon while at the store and found it for like $12, and I bought it. And so I got this book now of like 1,000, and I'm just like looking through it every day. Like, it's just sitting on my coffee table. And every day I'm like, oh dang, I want to do that. Oh dang, yeah. I want to do that. I want to do this. And here's what's amazing about that too. I look up Hawaii and I look up Maui in there. Of course, Maui's on there. And they got two things listed for Maui. Two things. And one's called Black Rock, jumping off Black Rock, and one's called the Road to Hana. Both very cool things in Maui. But like, those are two out of like 100 amazing things that I could tell you about Maui. So the fact that this book could have 1,000 places that I can guarantee you, a local to all those places will tell you about 100 other things around the area, which means there's like 100,000 amazing things in this world to go do and see. You just can't do it all. And so anyway, I just want to do as much as I can before I die. So that's one of my visions in life, is to travel a lot more.
And that goes back to what would be awesome.
What would be awesome? Yeah, that's a great book for trying to figure out what would be awesome.
I think that's the next podcast.
There you go. What would be awesome? That would be a cool podcast.
I love it. Well, I have on that note, I kind of have a random question. I want to know, have you ever like had any fun or unique investment that you've wanted to make?
Fun or unique investment that I wanted to make? Man, I'll say this. I have constantly come up with ideas of businesses that I really want to invest in. So I wouldn't say anybody else's necessarily, Like, I'm not gonna like throw my money at gold or Tesla, and I don't invest in anything other than business or real estate. But I want to make my business as my own business. But yeah, the first idea I ever had was like a mobile oil change company. I hate changing oil, but I just thought it would be a cool business. I like mapped it all out when I was like 18. And I sold wooden sunglasses for a while, like on Amazon. My brother and I started that. That was cool. I wanted to start a kite company. I wanted to invest in that. The current thing that I'm obsessing with for like 2 years now, but I'm forcing myself not to touch it because I have to focus, right?
Yeah.
Focus is, I made a website called, all right, let me back up. So there's this problem that I have that a lot of people have. And what it is you go on Facebook one day and you see, oh crap, it's my brother's birthday today. How did I forget it was my brother's birthday? And by that point, I don't live near my brother. It's too late for me to get him something. So what do? I text him and say, hey, happy birthday. Your gift's in the mail. And then maybe go and order something from right there. But I'm like the obvious guy that forgets. And I do it constantly. Anniversaries, my parents' anniversary, my parents' birthdays, my own anniversary, whatever. And I was like, why is there not a service that would have just reminded me 2 weeks ago that it was this person's birthday? And then I was like, you know, it'd be really cool is if there was a service that reminded me 2 weeks ago with somebody's birthday and gave me really good gift ideas for that person. And I was like, that would be cool. So I built it. So I actually hired developers and I built this thing. It's called remindergift.com. And it, nice. So here's my problem in life though, is I'm an idea guy. I'm a visionary. I'm not the guy who carries it to completion. So I built it. It's there. You can go do it later and you'll see that it actually is existing. But then I stopped. And I tell myself it's because I'm focusing, really, it's just because I'm really bad at finishing things. So it's there, but I have, every day I tell myself, I should just invest like $100,000 and hire like a rock star employee to run that business and grow that thing. Because I think it's a cool thing, because Amazon gives you an 8% commission off anything sold through a link. So all I'm doing is saying, here's gift ideas for your friend, go buy them on Amazon. And then I just get 8% of whatever they buy it for. And that would be actually a money-making business. So, hey, if you're out there and you want to run that business with me, let me know.
You're going to get 700 applicants again.
I know. That's all. Yeah. And the thing, it's got to be somebody that proves themselves. It's got to be the right fit, right? Rockstar. But I don't know. Anyway, that was probably way off base of what you were looking for. But that's what I think about investing in, is my own businesses, my own side hustles.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I was expecting like, the LA Clippers or something, but
yeah, no, I am a real estate guy.
I love it.
I think the best investment in the world is real estate, except for people to run your real estate business. Like that's the best investment in the world, because real estate is still the best investment, but the best investment in real estate is in people to run your real estate business, because you can only do so much. So once you start hiring and working with teams and bringing in partners, that's when explosive growth happens and work decreases. And that's what I want to do. I want to do more cool stuff in life and work less.
And that's where you're getting at now, right? I mean, you built out a phenomenal team around you.
Yeah, I don't really do. I mean, I post on Instagram, but like, and I kind of like lead the vision, but like, I don't work a tenth of what Ryan works or what Brian works or what Mike or Walker or Tristan work or Trisha. Like, they are all working their tails off. And like, I try, but like, I don't really have a role other than raising money. And so I just do that through my other means. So yeah, that's the power of a team.
That's awesome. Yeah. And Ryan is a rock star. I can attest to that.
He is a rock star.
Well, let's jump into our monumental questions. We could probably keep going and going, but
I go for hours. I like talking. Can you tell?
We'll have to do the next one in Hawaii.
Yeah, from the sea shed right here. We can see the seashore from the sea shed
and sell seashells.
And we can sell seashells on a podcast in the sea shed watching the seashore.
A podcast called What Would Be Awesome.
Yes, that's what it's going to be.
I love it. So what does success mean to you?
I'm going to combine, success is the same definition of financial freedom, I'm going to say. It's the ability to do what you want, where you want, when you want, how you want, with who you want. So that's how I kind of look at success, is like, at least from a monetary standpoint.
Yeah.
Like if I can do what I want, where I want, how I want, and that doesn't mean I'm necessarily rich. It just means I can do what I want, when I want, where I want, how I want, who I want. That's how I call it successful. Cause I'm fiercely independent in that. I like that. I don't like somebody telling me what I can and cannot do.
I love it. What about morning habits and daily rituals?
Yeah. I make a cup of coffee every single morning using an AeroPress. And like, I'm not even that big of a coffee snob. Like, I could just get a coffee pot and set it the night before and wake up to a warm cup. But there's something about the ritual of going through. You ever do an AeroPress before?
No.
It supposedly makes like the world's best cup of coffee. But like, I don't even know. Maybe it does. But it's just this art of like doing all these little tasks to like make it just right. That is almost like this meditation. I've heard it said that before, making coffee is meditation. And so I do that every single morning. And then while that's, I have to brew then for like 5 minutes inside this thing. So while it does that, I always read like a chapter or two from like the Bible. And then while that, like when I get to finish that, I grab my intention journal, I sit down and do that. Take a picture of it, post it up there. And then I go and hang out with the family for a little while or try to knock some work out. But like that little routine in the morning, if I can get that done, everything else in the day is better.
That's awesome.
I just got to like anchor to that. And if I can anchor to that, I feel a lot better.
That sounds like some pretty good habit stacking too.
Yeah, I do a lot of habit stacking. Yeah. Is I'm trying to develop a new habit, just build it on the back of another one and put them all together.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, honestly, the espresso machine is kind of the same with me. It's like, it takes a little while, but it is kind of meditative. It gets you, just gets you in your zone.
Yeah. Also, this is advice I read, I think it was in Miracle Morning from Hal Elrod. But he said, drink a huge glass of water the first thing you do when you wake up because we're dehydrated. We haven't drank in 8 hours. And like that, I feel like that was such a game changer for me. Like I just get a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
Like every day I'd have headaches for years. And then I started doing that every morning. First thing I do is I drink 2 huge glasses of water.
Yeah.
And and then the third glass I fill up to pour in my hot water heater for the, so it's actually a habit before the regular routine.
Nice.
Every day. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Whole day go better.
Every morning. I love it. What about favorite book or book you're currently reading or one of 10 that you're currently reading?
Yeah, I have this. I once added it up and I should do it again because I've tried just as bad. I once added up. I had like 23 books I was in the middle of reading at any given point.
Oh my goodness.
Because I read a ton of books and people wonder how I can do that because I have kids and I have like a busy life or whatever. But the fact is I read 1 or 2 pages at a time and then I set it down and I don't know, my brain can work that way. I can remember exactly where I was when I pick it back up again and I'm back in it. I'm reading right now a fiction book on Audible called The Eye of the World. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's like one of the best-selling book series of all time. It kind of reminds me of like Lord of the Rings. It's like 12 books that are, it's like 30 hours long, the first book. And then there's like 12 of them. So I'm going to be listening for the next year of my life. But anyway, they're making a TV show about it. And so I want to make sure I read the book before the TV show comes out. Anyway, so from a fiction standpoint, I'm reading that right now. Best fiction book I think I ever read was probably called, what's it called? Red Rising. You ever read Red Rising?
No.
Man, what a phenomenal book. Like, now there's it's like 3 books. I'm going to make sure that's the right name. Red Rising. I'll get the nonfiction in a second. Yeah, Red Rising by Pierce Brown. Dude, like, well, I read this book and like, I just like literally could not put this book down. Like I was like glued to my hand. I read the whole entire thing and I was like, that was the best thing I ever read. And like, I think I've read it twice. Then the second book, I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. Third book, I didn't even finish it. Which like the first one was so good. Now there's a fourth one or even a fifth maybe. Red Rising, I tell everyone to read it. It's fantastic. It's like science fiction, but also kind of old. It's like they go back, not back in time, but they go to a world where it's almost like medieval. But it's a science fiction futuristic thing. Anyway, super cool. Nonfiction. I'm currently in the middle of one called, I'm going to forget the name. Hold on. It's by Chip and Dan Heath. Let me find all their books. Switch is the one that am in the middle of, which is basically how we make decisions. I really like that one. Like how we change things, how we decide, how we make big shifts in our life. Yeah. That book has been huge. I love that book. I'm in the middle of Atomic Habits right now, which I think is sitting
around. I just finished that one.
Oh, did you? Yeah. This book is like just rocking my world right now. Atomic Habits. Like this is funny. I was saying like the books lying around. Like I'm not even kidding. They're literally this book, that page I'm on, it's sitting on the floor right next to my desk. What was this one called? One to Many, which is just a book about webinars. Just like, yeah, this one back here, just Jocko Willink's Discipline Equals Freedom. Yeah. Chip and Dan Heath had another book that it was like one of the best books I've ever read. It was called The Power of Moments. And it's all about making like powerful moments in everything that we do in business and in life, but like memorable moments that don't have to cost a lot of money, but just like, for example, we're looking to do this, and you're in fund one or two. Are you, you're in one of my funds, right?
No, not yet.
Okay. Not yet. Okay. So I was going to say if you were, you'd be getting this, but we're going to be sending a coconut potentially to, like, you can actually mail coconuts. We found this out.
That's awesome.
Like, we're thinking about actually mailing, like, not an envelope in a box, just an actual coconut to our investors as like a thank you for, you know, whatever. And that, now I just ruined it, so people are going to hear that. But like, this idea is like, I don't know, it's a clever moment that people are going to be like, remember that and talk about it. And so if you can add magical moments into your day, yeah, that book was like, yeah, it was great. Anyway, I could go on for an hour.
All right, guys, you got like a month's worth of reading. So
yeah, I'm actually going to start a new thing on my Instagram, I think, is like every day I'm going to take one of my books and just talk about it for a minute and talk about why I love it. Because I have like 100 books in there. I could go on for 100 days. So
honestly, last year, 2019, I think three of my top like six posts were books. It's great. Yeah, it's great content because it gives instant value and great book recommendations.
There you go. And we'll get you into my fund eventually, dude.
Yes, exactly.
You got to find me a deal through your network.
Yeah.
And then you can just jump into the fund that way. This is how it works. See?
Yep.
Using your brand.
We'll get you in the workforce too.
There we go. We're doing it. We'll trade.
I love it. Well, Brandon, I feel like we definitely could go on forever and ever. And still bring massive value and lots of laughs. But how can our followers reach out to you or get in touch with you or see what you're up to?
Yeah, I'm most active on social, on Instagram. I'm a Instagram junkie. I'm like a 13-year-old girl when it comes to Instagram.
Same.
But yeah, I really enjoy it. I have to like limit myself. Actually, one of my daily goals that I track every single day in my intention journal is screen time. I'm trying to like decrease my screen time on my phone. Otherwise, opendoorcapitalllc.com or odcfund.com goes to the same place, just a shorter name. So odcfund.com. And of course, Bigger Pockets, I'm on there. I got a profile there. You can follow me there. And Beardy Brandon on Instagram, though. That's my social.
Guys, go follow him. He's pretty awesome on Instagram.
Yeah.
And he's got massive value and he's pretty hilarious.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys, if you enjoyed today's episode, share it on social media. Let Brandon know you're listening. Let me know you're listening. Share your favorite part. And with that, guys, have a monumental day.